Please stay tuned to the end of this episode for a trailer for a new podcast we're thrilled about, The True Crime Files. You're probably already familiar with our friend Christine's website, thetruecrimefiles.com, and with the help of Scott Fuller from the podcasts Frozen Truth and Status Pending, she'll begin releasing the cases covered on the website in podcast form. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Prior to 1881, Pecos was little more than a far west Texas camp for weary cattle drivers. But when George A. Knight enticed the Texas and Pacific Railroads to build tracks through the section of land he owned there by gifting them a significant portion of the land, Pecos Station was born. And not long after that, a school was built, followed by several small businesses and a post office. It was, indeed, a sleepy town at first, but by 1890, by this point simply known as Pecos, it became a place of lawlessness and outlaws. That lawlessness, no doubt, abetted by the town's former saloon-operating deputy sheriff and Pecos marshal, James Brown Miller, known as Deacon Jim for his aversion to booze and his church-going, but also known as Killin' Jim and Killer Miller for his inclination to settle matters of the law and personal disputes with a firearm, and who upon moving to Fort Worth in 1900 advertised as and performed the duties of a professional assassin. Pecos is inevitably tied to the infamy of James Brown Miller, but after his exit, the town rode on the coattails of the gaining popularity of the rodeo, dubbing itself home of the world's first rodeo, since it claimed that in 1883, several cowboys drinking at Red Newell's saloon there began a boasting contest about roping steer and busting broncos. Instead of a shootout, luckily, local ranchers decided to put up prize money as an incentive for the competition to go past the drunken egos of the cowboys and into the form of an event. And the rodeo, as it's known today, proud locals claim, was born. Pecos remained quaint and quiet, virtually unknown to the rest of the nation and even the big cities of Texas, until 1962, when it was discovered that, for years, Pecos resident Billy Saul Estes had been successfully ripping off farmers and the government through land mortgage and agricultural fraud, including payoffs to high-ranking U.S. agriculture officials and bad business dealings that implicated his longtime associate, fellow Texan and then Vice President Lyndon Baines Johnson, in shady business practices. None of it got past Pecos Independent and Enterprise newspaper reporter and editor, Oscar Griffin Jr., though. He blew the lid off the entire debacle and won a Pulitzer Prize in 1963 for doing so. Much like the notorious legend of Killer Miller, Estes's scheme was a stain on the reputation of Pecos. But, at least this time, it was accompanied by the heroism of a do-right local journalist. Anyway, the event that followed the year after the exposed large-scale fraud of Estes would end up casting a shadow over it, as everyone in the nation coped with the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas. Not to mention the UFO fever over the next few years, in which Pecos itself was caught up in as West Texans from virtually every small town there were experiencing sightings of unexplained lights and flying objects in the black of the night of the desert skies. The distraction was short-lived in Pecos, though, when in 1966, a mystery began at the Roper's Motel there. A mystery in which answers are as elusive today as they were the day the event took place. The Roper's Motel in Pecos, Texas, off Old Interstate 20 on the east side of downtown, had its fair share of business from tourists and truckers due to its proximity to I-20 and U.S. Highway 285. They had a restaurant and a swimming pool attached. Between 1 and 2 p.m. on Tuesday, July 5th, 1966, a young man and a young woman entered the Roper's Motel and approached the registration desk. The young woman was described as attractive. She stood about 5 feet 4 inches tall and weighed approximately 120 to 130 pounds, with an olive complexion, possibly of Latin or Italian descent. She wore dark shorts and a flowered blouse, and had long brown hair and brown eyes. She appeared to be anywhere from 17 to 20 years old. The young man, about 25 years old, was slim and of average height and weight, somewhere around 5 feet 7 inches tall, and 135 to 140 pounds. He was light-complexioned, his hair reddish-blonde. He wore a white t-shirt and black trousers. The couple was husband and wife, the young man told the motel manager, Paul Rooks, and upon paying the $8.24 in advance, it was first reported, registered under the name Mr. and Mrs. Russell Batoon. The couple gave Rooks the impression that either they were newlyweds or not married at all. The young man did all the talking, but other than the formalities of registration, he spoke little other than to make certain that the room they were given had a television so that he could catch the 6 o'clock news. The couple retreated to their room. A few hours later, at approximately 4 p.m., the young woman emerged from the room, clad in a red swimsuit, and headed to the motel pool for a respite from the unrelenting West Texas July heat, while it is thought the young man stayed behind to nap. At about 5:30 p.m., guests and motel workers heard three screams from a woman. The cries for help echoed through the grounds of the motel, along with the sounds of panicked, flailing splashes, and several people rushed to where the screams originated, the pool, and discovered the young woman completely submerged in water and still. The granddaughter of Roper's Motel manager, Paul Rooks, quickly pulled her from the pool. CPR was performed, and an ambulance was called. It arrived in no time, and the young woman was loaded in and taken to the hospital. A maid of the Roper's Motel alerted the napping companion, her claimed husband, who asked where she'd been taken and for directions, and who also soon appeared at the motel reception desk, requesting he be given the registration card he'd filled out upon the couple's arrival so that he might use it for identification at the hospital where the young woman was taken, and to prove to the hospital the address of the hotel, and that they were indeed staying there. The card, which included the names and address given, was handed over to the young man. He sped off in what was only described as a late-model sedan. The woman was pronounced dead on arrival at Reeves Memorial Hospital, and the young man who claimed to be her spouse never arrived there to check her condition or to identify her. I think he got scared, Reeves County Sheriff A.B. Nails commented, opting for the simplest explanation he could muster. That's what's tragic about this. We don't know who she is, and her parents don't know she's dead, he went on. Upon the realization that the woman's companion likely wasn't planning on returning to identify the deceased young woman, the sheriff's department began investigating. They entered the room at the Roper's Motel that the two had checked into, but they found it virtually empty. The young man had taken the couple's belongings, and nothing was left in the room that would provide clues as to either of their identities. They did, however, lift fingerprints from the room, some of which investigators thought belonged to the young man. An autopsy performed on the young woman showed that she had indeed died of drowning. Her temple was bruised, but it was unable to be determined if the bruise occurred before she drowned or upon her body being removed from the pool. Police and the Odessa medical examiner who performed the autopsy thought that her death was the result of an accident and not violence. Sheriff's office deputies took prints from the young woman, referred to as Jane Doe at this point. The prints were immediately sent to the FBI's Washington, D.C. headquarters, along with the prints lifted from the motel room, but there were no prints on file that matched. Leads were scarce, and running the name that the couple registered at the Roper's Motel was producing no results. Families of missing women and girls began pouring into Pecos upon hearing word of the unidentified young woman's death. The Odessa, Texas mother and father of a 19-year-old woman who'd gone missing from Denver, Colorado, came to Pecos on Friday, July 8th, just 3 days after Jane Doe's tragic drowning. The missing woman's father told a reporter that the resemblance shared between the Pecos Jane Doe and his daughter was, quote, almost identical, but he and his wife agreed that they were not one and the same, at least at first, after their daughter's dentist said that their daughter's multiple tooth fillings were not consistent with what was described as the perfect teeth of the unidentified drowning victim. I still find it hard to believe that was not my daughter, the mother of the missing 19-year-old said, with tearful and desperate eyes. She looked so much like her. A week after the death of Jane Doe, on Tuesday, July 12, 1966, a Clute, Texas man contacted the sheriff's office in Pecos, providing them with a description of his dark-haired, dark-eyed daughter who'd gone missing the 27th of June to see if the Jane Doe was her. But it wasn't. Claus David Schlomb of Shriner, Texas, also sent in photographs of his sister, who vanished from Houston a year and a half prior, but the photos were not a match for the drowned young woman. We have nothing to go on at all. I'd rather take a beating than bury that girl in an unmarked grave, but we have no other choice, Sheriff A.B. Nails said, looking and feeling like he'd failed the Jane Doe. At 3 p.m. on Wednesday, July 20th, 1966, at the Pecos Funeral Home, a service was held for the young woman, paid for by funds donated by those in the community and the Odessa couple who thought she may have been their daughter, and also another New Mexico couple whose daughter was also missing. A Protestant minister who shared the duty of providing Pecos Jane Doe her last rites with a Catholic priest said, "This girl is not known to us here, but most certainly she is known to God. If there is someone somewhere who cares for this girl, may they know she is now surrounded in love by those who care. This is a special kind of tragedy. I've spoken at many tragic funerals, but always before there was at least someone to come forth and say, 'I knew this person.' This is a futile occasion, and an occasion for outrage. Outrage that, in this day and time, we can put men millions of miles into space, but we cannot identify this one girl who traveled our highways and walked on our streets." 40 residents and law enforcement officers attended the funeral, and though police carefully scanned the service for the young man last seen with the deceased, he was not there. The Odessa couple, whose daughter was missing from Denver, also attended, and at this point had grown unconvinced that the young woman being buried wasn't her. Six Reeves County Sheriff's officers lowered Pecos Jane Doe's casket, covered in pink and blue carnations, into her final resting place at Fairview Cemetery, a grave that would eventually be marked Unknown Drowned Girl, July 5, 1966. It is said that investigators still visit and bring flowers to the site, and for years someone unknown did the same, keeping the gravesite clean, and no one ever learned if the individual or individuals doing so had any connection to her. Though authorities assumed the Roper's Motel's practice of recording the names of guests on a separate form was a step in the right direction, even the names the couple used upon registration provided nothing, at least not until January of 1967, when, after months of running the name Pecos Jane Doe's male companion gave, Russell Batoon, they found an active U.S. Marine by that name. He was serving in Vietnam by the time they got the name Match, but he was stationed at North Carolina's Camp Lejeune after Pecos Jane Doe's untimely death. The military sent photographs and other pertinent information, such as his known whereabouts at the time, but the lead ultimately proved fruitless, as he was not the same man and had no links to the couple. After 2.5 years, in February of 1969, folks had come from all over Texas and the United States, thousands of them, calling and visiting Pecos to see if Jane Doe was their missing loved one, or to provide law enforcement with a tip. But nothing panned out, and an identification could not be made. During a 2-year period back in 1961 and 1962, my department found 7 bodies out in pastures over the county, and we managed to identify all of them except one, and it was so badly decomposed it was impossible. Somewhere there is a set of parents still looking for their daughter, Sheriff A.B. Nails said, saddened and defeated. Sheriff Nails added that if Pecos Jane Doe's companion would just come forward with her identity, he wouldn't be in any trouble. There were no charges to file against him. The lawman said the only thing he did wrong was skip out on his room bill at the Roper's Motel, though it was originally reported by the owner of the Roper's that he'd paid in advance. Sheriff Nails, it seemed, was comfortable at this point, releasing information his department had previously held close to the vest. Her clothes, he said, shorts, a blouse, and a bra, were the only items left in the motel room, and they had no laundry marks. They're thought to have been brand new and unwashed. He described the car the couple arrived in at the Roper's Motel a little more specifically, in year at least, calling it a 1963 year model. Sheriff Nails also spoke of a lead that was never able to be verified. We even checked out a conversation overheard by a waitress in a cafe, he said. She heard one man tell another that he picked up a girl down close to the border, but managed to get rid of her. That and hundreds of other leads led to nothing. Though speculation isn't generally what we do, certain aspects of the case of Pecos Jane Doe almost demand it. She obviously was there willing, as she was free to leave the room alone for a long period of time, while her companion reportedly napped. The young man could have easily written an anonymous letter or made an anonymous call to the police to name the unidentified woman after the nationwide pleas in the paper. But he did not. Was he perhaps unwilling to do so because her identification could have led right back to him? Did the couple even unpack their bags? The young man was able to leave very quickly. Were they reluctant to unpack because they were planning on resting for a few hours and leaving? or wanted to be ready to bolt if they sensed trouble? Most theories seem to center around the possibility that the Pecos Jane Doe was a mistress to, or a sex worker hired by, the man who she accompanied to the Roper's Motel the day of her unfortunate death. Considering his actions is important. If he were simply fleeing police and media attention due to an affair or indiscretion with a sex worker, the steps he took seem a little over the top. It's certainly possible, of course, and it seems investigators thought so at first too, since it appears they were trying to protect the possibly married man from a scandal by not releasing the name he'd checked in the motel under for quite some time. Perhaps the name and the registration card are a good place to start. For over 50 years, investigators have been unable to uncover any clue at all pertaining to the name that the man used upon registration at the Roper's Motel. It seems likely, no matter the theory, that the name was a fake, which would suggest that the address he used was also fake, and the young man still retrieved the registration card from the motel reception desk. Why, if the information on it was incorrect? Perhaps he did this so that no evidence of his handwriting would be left behind, or maybe fingerprints, which leads to another question. Did he wipe the room clean of his prints as well? It's worth understanding Pecos geographically, too, as well as the location of the Roper's Motel specifically. The Roper's Motel sat directly on Interstate 20, which runs east to west, and less than a mile from U.S. Highway 285, which runs north to south. Pecos, Texas, by highway, is a little over 200 miles east of the border Texas shares with New Mexico, and essentially the same distance to Juarez, Old Mexico. Less than 200 miles south of Pecos is Ojinaga, Mexico. For those who aren't familiar with Texas geography or travel, 200 miles in the state of Texas is a relatively short distance. To the north of Pecos, 86 miles up U.S. Highway 285, is Carlsbad, New Mexico. The proximity of Pecos to Texas's borders, along with the town's small, unassuming character, makes it an ideal spot for someone on the run, from something, to stop safely for a rest before either leaving or after entering the state. Also, he was concerned upon securing a room about catching the 6 o'clock news. Concerned enough, in fact, that it was virtually the only communication he made with the motel manager besides, of course, telling him he'd like a room. What was to be on or had the potential to make the news that evening that the young man was so adamant about checking? What could be a big enough story to make the news in the small town of Pecos, Texas? A bank robbery? A jailbreak? A murder? Investigators discovered that the clothing Pecos Jane Doe was wearing was new and unlaundered, and while it is unknown if her companion's clothes were also new, it is worth theorizing on why the young woman was wearing freshly bought clothes. Was the young man, or both he and Pecos Jane Doe, involved in something that would have sent them on the run? In early July of this year, 2019, 53 years after her death, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released an image of what Pecos Jane Doe would have looked like when she was alive, in hopes of finally identifying her. She was olive-complexioned, is possibly of Italian or Latin descent, with brown hair and brown eyes. She is estimated to have been born sometime between 1945 and 1950. She stood 5 feet 4 inches tall and weighed approximately 120 to 130 pounds. She is listed in the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's database as Jane Doe, 1966. Unidentified persons are currently and successfully being identified through the use of DNA technology and genealogy. By uploading your DNA results to GEDmatch and opting in to share your data matches with law enforcement, you may be the key that eventually gives this young woman back her name. If you're not sure how to upload or opt in, there are links in the show notes. If you have any information that might shed light on the identity of Pecos Jane Doe, please contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST or 1-800-843-5678 or the Pecos Police Department at 432-445-4911. Don't forget to stick around to hear a trailer for the True Crime Files podcast. The Odessa American, the Brazos Port Facts, the Victoria Advocate, the San Angelo Standard Times, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to support Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Hi, I'm Christine, and I'd like to introduce you to the True Crime Files podcast, a bi-weekly podcast that focuses on mysterious disappearances and unsolved murders. Every 2 weeks, we'll be releasing an episode that'll help you get to know a case really well without having to invest a lot of your time. Derived from the articles up on the True Crime Files website, you'll find that our show covers a diversity of victims and perspectives. You'll probably also notice that our episodes are narrated by Scott Fuller from the Frozen Truth and Status Pending podcasts. Be sure to subscribe to the True Crime Files today so that you never miss an episode. Thanks so much for listening, being a part of our true crime community, and helping to shine a light on cases that might otherwise be overlooked or underreported.